It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Hancock and another the independence declaring kind of guy, Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio. Scott Horton is an assistant editor at antiwar.com, and he hosts his own radio talk show, Antiwar Radio, for that site, and he's broadcast all over the place. And it's so good to have you on, Scott. I hear there's more people listening to you nowadays. How's that working out?
I don't know. Well, I'm on the Liberty Radio Network with you now. So yes. That's definitely, it's hard work, but we're making progress, like George Bush used to say.
Yeah. the one thing I really enjoyed our previous show that we did in talking about Iran and Afghanistan. And it's a lot of times I'll tell you to see if you kind of get the same experience. In our emails as talk show hosts, you have a lot of public relation firms that are just begging for you to get their latest whatever. Somebody gave them, $500 to promote their new book, their whatever, to, their agenda, whatever it is. Put my guy on, and here's all the reasons why. Well, a lot of the things that are going on now, I'm getting them from all over the political spectrum. And it seems that there's a concerted effort to carve up the next spending of the war. When they have these supplemental, extra, off-the-books kind of emergency, we got to have, billions and billions and billions of dollars, whenever they do that, there are groups that come to the trough, and there is a feeding frenzy, and you'll have all these guests, they will go to these different public relations firms to push their perspective, their book, their professor of what you call it in the commie socialist de la bastion of whatever, and they are there saying, it's better, instead of spending all these billions of dollars on dropping bombs, we should take just $1 billion, just a little bit of that, and spread it out over me and all my friends. And then they'll lobby Congress, they'll do it on radio, they'll have their own little postcard sending whatever. And the fact that they're stealing from me to do all this stuff to begin with doesn't even cross their mind. It's all about them getting their cut.
Well, yeah, never mind where they get the money from. I mean, the important part of what you're saying there, I mean, we all know the libertarian principle of, taxation is theft and theft is immoral and all that. But the real point, what you're saying is, you're talking about the confluence of interests that come together that probably all told represent, 3% of the American population, probably much less than that, who it's in their interests to have a world empire, to have another war and another war. Say, for example, stockholders at Lockheed, or people who represent the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, or the people over at the American-Turkish Council, Northrop Grumman, the major banks, of course, that make all the commissions off of all the debt and all the transfers. When they call it the military-industrial complex, they call it a complex because it's 7,000 different things. There is no other, you got to have one word for it, but it's the universities, of course, the entire scientific community is completely on the federal dole. We've been an empire for so long now, Ernie, that D.C., as Bruce Fine was saying on my show earlier today, or I guess I was saying it and he was saying that's right, is D.C. is just an imperial court now. That's all it is it's the people who come to reach their hand into your pocket, and the pretense of the common good, the pretense of, wise statesmen planning for the long-term future of America, is just, it's out the window. Nobody even ever heard of that. It's like, go ahead, it's a free country. Nobody says that anymore. Nobody even thinks of that anymore. It's all about, I mean, look at Dianne Feinstein, right? Dianne Feinstein is the wife of a guy, Richard Blum, I think it is. Blum, I know is his last name. And he owns, well, here I am talking out of school. I don't even know the name of the company. But it's basically the Democrat version of Halliburton or Bechtel. And he just has his wife in the Imperial Senate. And she's just there to prolong wars and take your money and give it to him. And it's as simple as that. And it's on its face.
Okay, now, it now might there's as well more
be,
to it.
It might as well be him instead of her sitting in that chair.
Well, it's always better to be insulated anyway. But this is, not by much, you got your wife, well, different name, but you know, whatever, same thing. You know, this is the point that I'm making, though. All that you said is absolutely correct, but there's another side to this. In the late 90s, there were a lot of NGOs, non-governmental organizations that went in and peace and love and missionaries and we're going to in schools and hospitals and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of like a prelude to invasion. It's like the church would send in the missionaries. You know, it's the, you know, in the name of Christianity, we plant the flag and we're going to, you know, convert the souls or murder them or whatever. And it's like this is a plan, a roadmap, a template that they just keep pulling off the shelf, and they never even stays up on the shelf long enough to gather any dust. They don't even have to blow the dust off. They take it, and all of a sudden, it's the late 90s. It's 2 or 3 years before the invasions and so on, and they have these non-governmental organizations in place in the Middle East. We're about the peace. We love you. We want to build a school. Well, they use money from whatever, and they have private funds, or they trace the money, and they'll tell you a whole lot right there. And I guarantee you, these schools, and certainly the ones they want to use taxpayer money for from the American people, are not going to have guys in there saying death to America, or we don't like America, or American soldiers go home. Heck no. So there is some kind of a penetration of the matrix there. They want to get into their culture. They want to, you know, give them the idea that they even need schools, and all they want to do is goat herd, okay? So then they go in, they say, all right, we have these organizations. Then they start dropping bombs. Then they're going, look, you're killing all these people. You're being bad. We have hospitals and doctors. We're the good guys. We want to be here. We want to take care of them. Then you have these billions of dollars, tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars that are going in these supplemental funds to continue these wars. Then all of a sudden, from out of the blue, all of these people that should be screaming, no more war, stop the war, they are coming in and saying, hey, we want a cut of the war. We will not oppose you as vigorously. We will be the good side of this. We will paint a rosy look what we're doing and open a school every month or something. If you'll give us part of the money, if we get our cut, we will be the humanitarian face, the diplomacy, the diplomatic version of, the Hillary Clinton army of, in the state, out of the State Department. If you'll give us the money, and I get them over and over, I had them on all last week, over and over and over about just pressuring Congress to give them a cut of the money from the left, Democrat, socialist, progressive, you know, portion of our society, you know, and I'll go, look, can we just leave? You know, first off, you're still putting a gun to my head. You're as bad as the other guy stealing from me to read your shit. Well, I think Americans are moral and they would, what? You're sitting there talking about morality and you're advocating that they're stealing from me? I mean, you know, we're in Orwell land, okay? So I can see this is a whole new version of the military-industrial complex that I think probably has always been there since the beginning of time and the, you know, expansion of empires using the guys with the crucifix or whatever, and that they go in, they plant themselves, they get in with the culture. Heck, they're the guys that telling all the people who to give the pallets of money to buy off. They're the only ones that know.
Yeah, well, you know, what happens is they create a consensus. That's what you're talking about, laying the groundwork, all these think tanks and what have you. Got the new emergency committee for Israel, and, of course, the Project for a New American Century is still there, and the Foreign Policy Initiative, and the American Enterprise Institute, and the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, and the Center for Security Policy, and the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs. And, of course, on the Democratic side, there are fewer, but there's the Center for a New American Security, and, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations. And what ends up happening is you have really just a few dozen people who run all these think tanks, the neoconservatives, we call them, most of them anyway. Not all of them are neocons, but it's pretty much their establishment now. And what they do is they just create this consensus where everybody knows that Iran is, first of all, hell-bent on acquiring nuclear weapons, second of all, bent on using them against Israel at their first opportunity, and third of all, too crazy to be dealt with in any fashion other than us starting a war against them first. Because, yeah, they're crazier than Mao Zedong, crazier than Joe Stalin, who, of course, Eisenhower and Truman declined to launch preemptive wars against them to prevent them from obtaining nuclear weapons. But in Washington, D.C., there's 12 think tanks and, the few major editorial board of the major papers, certainly the New York Times and the Washington Post, and the rest of the media takes their lead from there. The TV, of course, takes their lead from there.
When we come back, we'll talk about this.
Everybody just agrees that everybody knows that we have to have a war.
We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Scott Horton just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Yeah, let's take a look. Take a look, you see, along with Scott Horton from antiwar.com/radio. And Scott, you know, one thing I wanted to share this with you. I really had this, it weighed heavy on me this last week because it was, I could see what was happening. It is, I give you an example. There was a woman, her name is Rebecca Griffin, and she's from peaceactionwest.org. You ever heard of those guys?
No, afraid not.
There's another $33 billion for the war in Afghanistan, okay? So here we have, it's going through Congress. They're going to, you know what they're going to do. You know, they'll whine and complain about it, you know, and stuff. But eventually the left will get behind Pelosi and friends and Obama and the troops and what. I don't even know what excuse they're using anymore. But they just keep passing more and 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 more. And then this group comes out and says, hey, you know, look for the home team here. Hey, you know, this is the last planned war supplemental since September 2001. Yeah, you know, the last planned one, you know. The Congress has passed 17 separate emergency funding bills totaling $822.1 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. After 7 years of war, the American people deserve an honest accounting of this and blah, blah, blah. We must break that recent tradition and include future military costs in a regular budget and, a little for taking care of these NGOs and us being nice guys to the Afghanis. So they'll go through all this stuff, and the bottom line is, a little for the good guys. No, by the way, we're the good guys sitting here in Oakland, California, that we want to get our cut. And we'll skim off a little bit as it gets shipped over to Afghanistan. And these guys out there and these missionaries and hospitals and clinics and schools and whatever, and they keep talking about schools. And I'm going, well, we're not in a big enough depression now. I mean, what about here? You know, I mean, if you're going to steal from me, at least use it in my own country. You know, I'm very... You know, I see where this is going, and I can understand. And then another show I had on is a gentleman, Radical Peace, People Refusing War. And this is from a gentleman, he's Professor Hathaway out of Massachusetts, and it's writing books, and it's all on, you know, all this money's going in the wrong place. We need to have it go over here. And towards, you know, we direct it into our group of people. And I'm afraid that they're going to be successful. And every time you have these spending bills, it's just a feeding frenzy for everybody to get their cut. And what they don't want is they don't want these people to be against them. They don't want these people to be anti-war. They want them to be pro-trough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. And here's the worst part of it, just, you know, in terms of irony or whatever, is that they spend about $37 billion a year on lobbying Congress. And then they reap trillions. And then, of course, as you say, you have the people who really are, you know, if you grabbed them on the weekend and asked them, they really are anti-war, a lot of those Democrats in the Congress. A lot of them voted against the Iraq War, but they vote to fund it anyway. And the reason why is, just like you say, they get cut in, well, a few million dollars for your district, right? Here's a couple of million dollars for your district that'll help you, you know, subsidize a local company there or build a bridge with your name on it or something that'll help you get reelected next time. And that's the price of a yes vote on continuing to finance the war forever. And so, you know, this is, as Justin Raimondo says in his article on antiwar.com today, democracy is the chink in our armor here. You know, our society has this thing called the Congress, where if, you know, they're congressmen are a dime a dozen, senators two bits. And if you're already rich, you can go round up some congressmen and have them steal unlimited numbers of billions of dollars for you and your friends at the expense of everybody else. And everybody else means, you know, the other 90-something percent of us. And you know, a lot of businesses in a lot of ways, you know, suck off of the trough. But really what we have here, more than anything, with all the bailouts now and the economic troubles that you're talking about, it's really a case of the billionaires versus all of the rest of us. That's your class distinction now. All the millionaires, they're on our side, or at least whether they know it or not, they're the victims of the same group of rapacious billionaires who control the state. And like you say, it's the reason it's such bad times now is because these men are willing to kill the golden goose, or the goose that laid the golden egg, you know? They're willing to try to wring more out. In fact, if you remember that story, the guy gets greedy and he kills his goose that lays the golden egg to cut it open to try to get more golden eggs out of there. There must be a bunch of magic golden eggs in there. No, you have to be patient and wait for the next one to get laid, you know? But they're willing to slit our throat, cut us open and see whether they can get even more gold out like that. And they're willing to take the whole country down with them. And, you know, Glenn Greenwald was complaining on his blog today that, you know, they got designs on Social Security. And it's not because they're peace and Bill of Rights libertarians like you and me who say that, look, Social Security is a big Ponzi scheme and it's, you know, ineffective and immoral and it's wrong and whatever from a real principled point of view. It's simply, you know, I think he even quotes George Carlin saying, look, no, they're just going to steal it from you. They're going to take all that Social Security money and they're just going to take it. Bush already tried to do it and put it all in the stock market, which, think of what would have happened. They'd taken all that money and put it in the stock market in the Bush years after this crash. And then and it would basically just, of course, make the national government the biggest stockholder on Wall Street, if you think we don't already live in a fascist country now. And basically, they're willing to take all of our pensions, all of our parents' old age money, all the people who paid into Social Security their whole life, all of, as you said, the local domestic programs, they're willing to strangle all of that away and tax us, each one of us probably, out of the last of our homes. Conscript the last one of our kids before they give up the empire. The thing that this society needs the least is the thing that our establishment is determined the most to hold on to at the expense of everything else, including your grandma.
I am of the opinion that whenever I was talking to this one gentleman, this Professor Hathaway, he's going on about which one was it? It was another guy. I had to add them, they're all the same. They blend together. And I tell the audience, I go, look, of course I have these progressives on. Of course I have the socialists. Of course, I mean, you know, it's more fun and we learn a lot more.
And they're at least they're against empire.
Well,
unlike the average conservative.
You would think so, but they still fund it. You know, they're still going to use the mechanism that guarantees its creation.
Yeah, you know, but wait a minute. You can't say that you got to be a libertarian and completely anti-state in order to be against imperialism. That's not the same thing. You know, you could be a complete liberal Democrat for every kind of safety net that somebody could ever imagine and still think that the military ought to have 50 men in its standing army until the next time we're attacked by a major power.
Okay, you may think that, but let me tell you what the result is. This is what my point is when I'm talking to these guys, is that what they are arguing is, one gentleman I had on, it was about the, well, it was a lot of stuff, but, you know, he is advocating for this collection of money for what they want. You know, the same things that you're talking about. You know, it's education, it's peaceful this, it's peaceful that. And what was it on? It was on the stock market legislation. You know, we're going to have to regulate them more. We're going to have to get in there and fix it and have them not rob us so much and all that. I'm going, whoa, time out. Do you really think that's going to have any impact whatsoever? You're not even addressing the fact that they're socially and economically engineering us in such a way that, one, they take it from us to begin with. There's a line on our paycheck. You know, it's FICA or Mrs. FICA, and she likes to shop, and there's this one and that thing and that state deal and whatever. And it goes, and they'll socially and economically engineer us by, one, taking it, and, two, telling us where we need to put it, or coercing us or bribing us with tax laws that have us put it into buckets that then they are going to steal. I guarantee it. And who's going to steal it? Whomever can get to it. And then it funds what? Well, more of this empire stuff. So I'm just going, you know, regardless of whether they want it or not, they're funding it by allowing us to be stolen from in the beginning.
I can't argue with that.
When we come back, we'll talk with Scott Horton a little more.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And pledging allegiance to and stomping for and bowing and scraping and everything for what? For legitimacy to rip me off. And this is the one thing, you know, I want Scott to go ahead and finish his comment on, is that I am of the opinion, as much as I've been on Air America for years, you know, I dealt with the left. I went through the 08 presidential election cycle with these guys. I get it. I understand. But if we could, when Obama gets in, he would steal your money for a good reason. And I'm going, no, he won't. It is to use as a justification for your acquiescence for them to take money and put it into a bucket. The only argument is how are they going to do the plumbing on the bucket and who's going to get that money? It is delayed spending. It's like when my kids were young, oh, I'm saving. No, you're not. You're just delayed spending. You just want to save up enough money so you can go spend it on whatever. And when are they going to empty the buckets of money? When was that going to happen? They will go for generations to build up an enormous amount of money in buckets all over, and now they got a new one with health care. They have, you know, Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and all of these tax deferments and engineering with the tax code to get you to put your money into a pension fund, and your employer would match it, and they would have 401ks and IRAs and all this. Is everybody's chips on the table now? Is everybody all in? Oh, and when are we going to scrape it off and say it's ours now? When are we going to deal that ace up, you know, we always had up our sleeve as a government and take it all? When are we going to do that? Or the corporations or the banks or the whoever that's in charge of the government to be able to do it? When are they going to do that? They're going to do it right when it's at its maximum peak before the baby boomers start to retire. Right when they start to retire, they're going to go, thanks for playing, it's ours now. And that's exactly what they did. And they're going to continue to do it until this economy finally bottoms out, and it's a long way from that. And then they'll start all over. And the entire time that they're doing this, you got the progressives on the left going, well, they just didn't spend the money on the right things, without understanding it's not what they promised to spend it on. It's the guarantee that they're going to steal it from you first and put it in a bucket, and whoever has control of the bucket is who's going to get the money. That's what's happened. It's going to keep happening until we finally get off the merry-go-round. In my not-so-humble opinion, Scott.
All right, so now what do I have to say about that?
I agree.
Another question? I think that what I have to say about that is I hope people are listening. You know, I think that this is why Murray Rothbard called it the warfare welfare state. How many people are, you know, I met a kid up at Camp Casey where I first met you when Cindy Sheehan was protesting George Bush up there, and he was a veteran against the war, but, oh, he was still an active duty guy. He was only home for a few weeks or whatever and had to go back, and he was there supporting Cindy Sheehan and didn't want to go back. And I said, well, kid, you know, don't go then. And he said, yeah, but they already gave me all this money. and I already owe them, and there's really nothing I can do. And, you know, I mean, that's a more acute example, but it is. It's the whole society can't imagine. Where would they be without the federal government here to protect them? Because they are, after all, on the dole, one way or the other. Hell, even the cigarettes I smoke are all subsidized. Who knows how much? Although they sure tax them a lot, too, so maybe that balances out. But the point is, virtually the whole society is on welfare in one way or another, and therefore we love them. And therefore they can steal from us and spend it on whatever they want, such as murdering well over a million people like they have so far in this century, Ernie, and you're 100% right. I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, now, one reason I wanted to get to these continued funding of what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I remember it was last week or so, we had the Iraqi parliament kind of took a break. They said, you know, we're not getting anything done, whatever, it's hot, whatever. What was that about? What's going on? Are they converting over? Because I saw McCain this last week in some debate. Oh, yeah, Afghanistan, we're going to have the same success that we had in Iraq. We got a stable government in Iraq now. Iraq's done, man. We're all good. We can go, you know, beat the crap out of Afghanistan without having to worry about Iraq anymore.
Isn't
that
amazing?
Is that true?
Know, seriously, I mean, this is its own separate story besides what's actually going on in Iraq. It's just the fact that the surge did work at brainwashing the American people into completely forgetting the history of the Iraq War from 2003 up until 2007. Just the million dead people, forget that. The giant civil war that was all the fault of the American government, and not only immoral and cruel and illegal invasion, but the most hapless, ridiculous, you know, half-witted attempt to occupy a country probably ever. You know, well, a lot of it was deliberate. A lot of it probably was just stupidity. But the point is, a million people died from this thing. It was an absolute catastrophe. And all General Petraeus did was admit defeat. That's what he did, Ernie. He said, you know what? I'll go ahead and bribe the Sunni insurgency to no longer fight us, and I'll recognize their ability to patrol their own neighborhoods, just like they had been begging to do in the summer of 2003, 4, 5, and 6, up until that point. They'd been begging all along, please, just let us patrol our own neighborhoods and, you know, maybe give us a little bit of money and don't take our guns away. And that's what Petraeus did. He went in there. That was his success, Ernie, was he went in there and he told George W. Bush, everything that you've said for all these years about we are going to defeat the insurgency, I'm not going to do that, Mr. President. You want me to save Iraq from itself or save us from it? You're going to have to let me make a deal with the Sunni insurgency. And Bush said, okay. So there's your so-called victory is they agreed with the Iraqi government, we'll leave. They withdrew all the troops back to their bases, and they've sworn, although, you know, Barack Obama and his genius going along with this status of forces agreement has 3 years from the time he took office to be a liar about it, so we'll see how it goes. I think we're all pessimistic. But basically, they've gone along with the status of forces agreement mostly in withdrawing most of the troops back to their bases, withdrawing many from the country and sending them off to go fight in Afghanistan instead. And yet, what was the surge supposed to produce? Ernie, go back to 2006 and 2007.
Supposed Remember to the produce
benchmark?
A government.
They were going to, right, they were going to create a security situation in Baghdad that was good enough that they could work out their differences and form a single monopoly state that would be allied with America and presumably Israel forever and ever. And that hasn't happened at all. You ask me about, well, why is the parliament taking a break? It's because months after the last elections, which is the only time they talk about Iraq on TV. Look, everybody, Iraq, remember we told you the surge worked? Look, here's a woman with purple ink on her fingers. See, told you it worked. Okay, now back to football or whatever. No more Iraq. And here we are months later, Ernie. And they still have, no one has a plurality enough to form a government, a majority to form a government. Alawi, the former CIA agent, won the plurality, although Maliki keeps assassinating the members of his party. Maliki and Muqtada al-Sadr are the leaders of the two different major Shiite factions, and they can't work things out, apparently because of the grudge between Sadr and Maliki. Sadr insists on Ibrahim Jafari or perhaps his nephew to be the prime minister, and Maliki insists on staying himself. The Kurds are mostly shut out at this point and have an alliance of some sort with Alawi's faction now instead of with the Sodders faction as they did before, and although I'm not exactly sure how clear those lines are. And the point is, it's a giant disaster, right? Nobody can make any sense out of it at all, even someone who's memorized all the parties and all the politicians and where they're from and what they're about.
I make perfect
Nobody
sense
knows
of
what's
it.
Going to happen other
I know
than
exactly
that the
what's
problem is
happen.
Solved and people are still dying and American troops are still going on combat missions. Now, war is not over. People, there's truck bombs going off. There's assassinations all the time. And the only thing that happened really was that General Petraeus showed up right when the Shiites were finishing up winning the civil war and, you know, so-called cleansing the Sunni Arabs out of Baghdad. It's now an 85% Shiite city because of that civil war. And Petraeus showed up basically at the end of it and said, okay, well, we'll stop ganging up on you with them if you'll stop shooting at our guys. And they took our money and made the deal.
Yeah,
that's
no,
all.
I know exactly. I mean, everybody in the entire country don't know what's going to happen. Let me tell you what happened when it first started. I go like this. Let me tell you, in 2003, before you went in, I said, let me tell you what's going to happen. It's going to be, you know, this big, giant shock and awe kind of thing. Going to go in. A Marine's going to have his foot up on the rubble. He's going to hold the American flag and say, we win. That's exactly what happened. There was that, you know, Saddam's palace. They took his down, put the American flag up. Ah, ha, 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 ha. And then they go, mission accomplished. And then the war started. And then it's going to go right up until forever, until we as an empire just fall apart, because I tell you what the end game of this whole thing was. You keep saying it, but you don't emphasize it enough. We retreat back to our bases.
Right.
That was the point, is to have bases, enormous, big, giant, never going away bases in Iraq. How many bases we got there, Scott?
I don't know. Dozens at this point.
Bunch.
You were there before, though.
Bunch. Oh, a bunch. Well, we'll talk about the bases more when we get back, and then what's going to happen in Afghanistan. It's just going to be a redux of the same thing. You watch. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Some rocks, tell the Ayatollah, gonna put you in a box. Yeah, the music and the war drums are starting up again. Oh, it's all about Iran, right after they get done with Afghanistan. You know, I it's like you always got to have it in threes. You know, there's always got to be three places we got to go be at war with. There's like the axis of evil. It's going to be Iraq, Iran, North Korea. You know, I mean, now it's going to be Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Then it's going to be, you know, they just keep keeping it in threes. You got to have two backups.
Well, and if we're lucky, maybe they'll stop with Somalia instead of going to the fourth one, Iran, which is the one I think you're talking about.
Well, this is, let's go ahead and finish up with Afghanistan, too. I want to talk a little bit, we're running short on time, but, well, give me your spiel, man. I mean, what's the end game on Afghanistan? Are they looking to do what?
They're going to lose. What they're trying to do now, Ernie, is they're trying to, because they still believe that the more troops they put in, the more firepower they direct, the fewer Taliban there will be, which is obviously ridiculous. But anyway, that's what they think. So, because, of course, Taliban just means anybody who resists, although that is, I think, mostly people from among the Pashtun tribes. But the thing is about it is that people debate now the numbers. I guess, you know, nobody really knows, but it's something like the Taliban control 60% of the country in the daytime and 80% at night. And 100,000 or 200,000 or halfway between there or something, that's not enough troops to change that. And see, in Iraq, they were overthrowing the minority dictatorship. And they had the majority basically stand back and let them do it. And then basically because they were smart, they had really smart leadership in the form of the Ayatollah Sistani and Muqtada al-Sadr and others, they played the elections game. And they have their majority power. Then it was a matter of that kind of slow-motion civil war to consolidate their authority over Baghdad. But now they don't really need us. Maybe the Kurds need us, but the Iraqi government doesn't need us. And if they insist upon it, which, you know, judging by the amount of power that Muqtada al-Sadr has now, I think that there's at least a 50-50 chance that there won't be any bases left there at all. Because, if Muqtada al-Sadr and the Ayatollah Sistani have their way, they're not going to tolerate any bases, and they're going to make a hold of the deal. I think we'll see about that. But now here's the thing, one more thing, and then I'll be quiet, is that in Afghanistan, No, we're fighting against the majority to prop up the Northern Alliance combination of a few warlords and, you know, the ethnic and tribal groups that they're from. But they don't have the power, they never will have the power to rule over Afghanistan, except at least in some form of coalition with the Taliban. And more likely is that when America eventually is driven out of there, which we eventually will be, the Taliban will take over the whole country, at least for some time. And I don't think that that's really undoable. You know, that's like saying, you know, to say otherwise would be to say, well, we have to stay in South Vietnam forever to make sure that it's never taken over by the North. But you know what? At some point, you just have to cut your losses. It's better than turning Pakistan into Cambodia.
Okay, no, I can I understand the parallels here. You know, in the Middle East, it's Vietnam without the humidity. I get it, okay? The thing is that, you know, Maliki, he, am I saying that right? You know, he's the prime minister of Iraq right now?
Yeah, Maliki or what?
Maliki,
okay. As far as I know, I'm from Texas. I don't speak Arabic that well.
So Maliki, he needs the United States to be able to even have a 5 minutes of maintaining his power. Am I relatively correct in that?
Well, I think that used to be the case. I think that basically now the Iraqi army and the Iraqi government, such as was created for them by the United States with the help of Iran, basically is the government, certainly of the South and including Baghdad. I don't know if they have ultimate authority over the Anbar province and some of those places, but he has, Maliki has the consent of the political leaders of the majority Shiites. It doesn't mean that all the people in who are, you know, Shia and mostly southern Iraq favor him necessarily, but
okay, let's get this out. Let's get this out right here.
He had basically the acceptance of his power by the Ayatollah Sistani and by Muqtada al-Sadr.
Okay, you're just talking a bunch of names, Scott. Hold on a second. You have Shiite and Sunni. There are the Shiite, which is Maliki, that has a kind of the support from Iran because there are a bunch of Shiites and so on. And you know,
the thing is, Ernie, that the Sunni lost the civil war. They're not going to be able to take back Baghdad in any foreseeable time. The only question is whether the Shiites can dominate the Sunni provinces.
They're not going away.
Well, but they're not even going to be able to try to take back Baghdad.
They're not going to go away. Are they? You think that they're just not going? They're just going to evaporate from all of this imaginary lines they drew in the sand anyway?
Well, no. I'm saying that I think that the question there will be whether the Shiite government will be able to truly extend a monopoly of power over the majority Sunni parts of the country. I don't think the question of whether the Sunni insurgency, as we used to call it, will rise back up and try to retake Baghdad. I don't think that's possible, and I think they know that. That's why they made the deal with General Petraeus.
Scott, I need to ask you some questions because you have this information. You got to let me ask the question, okay?
All right, sorry.
The point that I'm making is that Iraq has, just like Afghanistan, they're trying to make it into one homogeneous country. It's one, we got to get a, you know, common soccer team, okay? We got to get, got to do our South Africa thing, we have our own rugby team, all right? They're trying to make it into one thing. Iraq never was one thing.
That's not really true.
So the Kurds are what?
Iraq was one thing from the end of World War I through 2003.
So what are the Kurds?
To various degrees. Well, they are Iraqis. I mean, many of them consider themselves Iraqis as well as Kurds, just like you're from Arizona and from America too, you know?
Hey, man, I didn't go there. I'm just saying, you know, are you telling me that Iraqis, there are Kurds, there's Sunni, there's Shiite, there's all these different groups, and they're all flying the Iraqi flag in their living room?
More or less, yes. I think that there's a lot of nationalism. That doesn't mean that there are not serious differences and major grudges over recent history either. But it does mean that, yeah, there is a bit of Iraqi nationalism, and I believe that left to their own devices, there probably will be some form of coalition Iraqi state at the end of this. Question is whether we'll leave them to their own devices.
Okay, what about the Kurds and overlap in the Turkey and so on? Kurds going to be part of this national Iraqi thing?
I think for now, although, you know, I don't know. I mean, I asked Patrick Coburn about that, and he said in the long run there will be a Kurdish state of some kind, and then that will certainly lead to problems with Turkey, Syria, and Iran. But I don't think that's anytime soon because, you know, they have a lot of interest because of the oil, too. And I learn a lot of what I think about this from Patrick Coburn, by the way. He really is the best. And he points out that, you know, the politicians, not necessarily all the people of Iraq, but just like here, they're not what counts. It's the people with the political power in Iraq, the leaders of the Kurdistan Workers Party, and I forget the name of the other one, they have plenty of interest in maintaining peaceful relations with the Arabs and the rest of the country and maintaining coalitions so that at the very least they can share in the oil wealth, which is, after all, rolling in. And so, I mean, not at full capacity, but it is coming in, and they want their share of that. And, you know, just like us libertarians are always trying to teach people, if you can get people trading among each other, you'd be amazed how quickly growth
can
kind
of
be put to the side.
Okay, so now let's transfer, before we run out of time, let's go ahead and transfer this over to Afghanistan. Afghanistan, you're saying, are they a totally different boat? Are they in the same thing? They got a common flag, too, or what?
Oh, no, I don't think that they're very nationalistic in the sense of any, you know, Western-style nation-state that they ever had loyalty, but they certainly are anti-foreign occupier, and that's all they need, and it's the vast majority of those people who at least tacitly support and are, you know, tacitly sympathizers at the very least with those who are fighting us, and that is a lost cause, man. That's like, you know, invading Vietnam. It just doesn't work, and it's not going to work here, and you know, we have the ability, we have the firepower, Ernie, as you know, to keep as many troops as we want there on their bases, even if surrounded on all sides, and protect them with air power. And, of course, they'll try their very best to not have a Saigon embassy roof helicopter scene on the way out of there. But, you know, Gareth Porter tells me that he thinks that Petraeus already sees the writing on the wall and that he knows that his job now is to try to figure out a way to make it look like we're saving a little bit of face on the way out the door. And after all, we got bases all throughout Central Asia. We get thrown out of Afghanistan. That doesn't mean the empire has to quit all of Asia. And I think that that's a calculation that the imperialists are making right now. Is this really worth it when we have all bases on the countries that border the Russians anyway? So
okay, well, how does this play into Iran? You know, they're bomb Iran, man. We got to go Iran. We got Joe Lieberman in Israel saying we're going to need a preemptive strike. We got, you know, Pastor Hagley or whatever his name is going, oh, we got a preemptive strike. Iran, and we have these military bases surrounding them. We got them in Afghanistan. We got them in Iraq. We got Pakistan. You know, we got all this stuff. Are we going to Iran or not?
Well, I don't know. They just passed some new sanctions through the UN Security Council, and
that
the neocons just founded a brand new think tank called the Emergency Committee for Israel. So I think the best guess, unless, you know, there's a surprise, would be that over the next year, we're going to hear more and more propaganda, basically laying that groundwork, like the PNAC document, for the eventuality. And it's all based on lies, Ernie.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Scott. You know,
Israel, the Iran one is.
Well, did you have time to stay into the next hour?
Sure, one more.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do this some more. I got some. Let me see what my schedule is. Dang it, before I go saying that. I want to make sure that we, you know, get more into Iran. Nah, I got a guest. You know, we'll have you back. Can you come on tomorrow?
I think so. Talk with Angela.
All right, we'll go ahead and see if we can work it out and get Scott Horton back.
Thanks for having me, Ernie.
You bet, man, because I want to make sure that we get more on Iran. You know, we got a little bit of Iraq in there. We got a little bit of understanding of, you know, where the money's going and a little bit of Afghanistan. But I want to focus on Iran because here we go. Why? What's the successes we've had somewhere else over there? I don't know. We'll find out. We'll be right back.